I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron's Streetwise podcast on business and investing. Each week we hear from company chiefs and analysts about profound changes facing investors. We've heard from Disney's Bob Iger about the future of movies and theme parks, CVS's Larry Merlo about stores providing more health services, and Ford's Jim Hackett about how the pandemic might change the car business. Subscribe to Barron's Streetwise on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, June 18th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. There's been a lot of conversation about policing speech on the internet, a lot of back and forth between the administration and tech companies. And on Wednesday, the Department of Justice weighed in. They proposed new rules that would roll back protections for internet companies like Facebook and Twitter. Our legal affairs reporter will explain what they look like after these headlines. The world's biggest tech companies have been announcing major racial justice initiatives in recent weeks in response to the killing of George Floyd and protests in its wake. The latest, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings and his wife Patty Quillen are donating $120 million to historically black colleges and universities, including Spelman and Morehouse. The funding represents the largest ever gift to HBCUs, and it will be used for scholarships as well as helping these schools rebound from the effects of the pandemic. Our higher education reporter, Melissa Korn, says that money could have a big impact.
Colleges broadly are hungry for money right now in a lot of ways, but HBCUs historically just don't have nearly as much. Their endowments on the median endowment is about half the size at HBCUs as it is at other institutions. Spelman and Morehouse are among the best funded HBCUs. Their endowments are both well into the nine figures, but even that is not in the top 100 of endowments. So even though they're relatively well off for HBCUs, they still cannot meet full financial need for everybody. They have a lot of students who just can't afford to go there, and they want to change that.
But some tech companies have been on the receiving end of protests and criticism as well. Several civil rights groups are encouraging big advertisers to pull spending from Facebook. The campaign includes the Anti-Defamation League and the NAACP. They're protesting what they say is Facebook's failure to make its platform less hostile. Our reporter Deepa Seetharaman has more.
These civil rights organizations and other advocacy groups have been having these conversations with Facebook behind the scenes for years. You know, they've pushed Facebook on a number of issues, particularly around hate speech. This call for a boycott is animated by frustration after years of these conversations not going anywhere. There are a bunch of different initiatives that they're looking at. For example, the ADL has asked Facebook to create a specific content moderation pipeline exclusively for identity-based hate speech. So if you are the recipient of hate speech that's because of your race or your religion, you know, experts in hate speech would handle the issue. That's just one example. Another example would be to offer more transparency about the kinds of hate speech they find and detect and across their platform. I think they're looking for both more information from the company at a high level, but also more enforcement.
Facebook has said it's taken significant strides to cut back on hate speech, but acknowledged that there's always more work to do. These civil rights groups aren't the only ones asking Facebook and other internet companies to do more. The DOJ has proposed new rules governing their liability for the content on their platform. We'll talk more about that after the break.
Social distancing slows the spread of coronavirus, so we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. More info at coronavirus.gov. Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Are tech companies responsible for what users post on their platforms? And if so, what kinds of content should they take down and what do they leave up? What if it's politically charged? How do they make sure that one side of the aisle isn't being favored over the other? These are the kinds of questions Washington has been trying to answer lately. And now the DOJ has proposed new rules to roll back protections that have been in place for these tech companies and make them liable for what's on their sites. Our legal affairs reporter, Brent Kendall, has been looking into this, and he joins us now to explain. Brent, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So tell me about these new rules. What is the DOJ proposing?
Well, so this is sort of the latest salvo between the administration and Silicon Valley on this. You know, President Trump had an executive order that he issued back in May, which had a lot of aims of things he would like to do, but not a ton of teeth, because the White House can't do a lot of this stuff by itself in terms of imposing liability on tech firms. I mean, and quite frankly, the Justice Department can't either. But what they offered is a far more detailed vision of how to roll back immunity for internet firms than what the White House had. And this, their sort of multi-pronged proposal here is something that they will deliver to Congress and work with people on the Hill who, you know, have already been considering making changes to the law to try to update these immunities, which have been in place since 1996. And, you know, if anything remotely like the DOJ proposal ends up being enacted, you know, there are going to be a lot more restrictions on how online platforms can do business without having to worry about being sued.
So what kind of things are they specifically proposing?
Well, I would say you could put everything into two major buckets, and then there are a bunch of details from there. Number one, the Justice Department, I mean, as much as there's been a lot of public conversation about censorship and moderating content and whether conservatives are being disadvantaged in their views, I mean, that's all part of this. But like the number one part, the way their proposal is framed, is all about facilitating wrongdoing or harm or unlawful activity online. And so basically what Justice Department officials will tell you is that the platforms just aren't that aggressive in trying to weed some of this content out and to weed some of these bad actors out. And so under this new regime, if you have actual knowledge of people doing nefarious things on your site, or if you're so willfully blind or reckless in how you manage your site, you could be held liable for things like, say, a whole host of online scams, elder fraud. If some elderly person saw something on Facebook and ended up, being deceived and lost money, if the immunity for tech platforms goes away, Facebook could be sued for that. If you have a child who bought, illegal drugs online and got injured from taking them without this immunity, the place where they found the opportunity to buy the drugs, that online platform could be sued. So, a big part of the first component of this is that kind of stuff. The department's also worried about spread of child pornography, sexual abuse kinds of things. And then there's also a terrorism piece of this. There was a case where there was a lawsuit against Facebook, and the allegations were the terrorist group Hamas was basically using the platform to connect with potential recruits who then joined the organization, and engaged in acts of terrorism. And there was a civil lawsuit on this, and the courts ruled that Facebook could not be sued for this, and they weren't civilly liable for any Hamas recruitment that happened. And so they're really stuck in the craw of Attorney General William Barr and others. And so that's one of the kinds of cases that they've cited repeatedly for why they want changes.
Now, these are everything you've just mentioned so far are really nefarious and in other ways, actually illegal activities that are happening on the platforms. And there's been a lot of scrutiny around this law. And we've been talking about it for a while, the Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. That really has been much more, the conversation's been much more about free speech and about misinformation or information. It's about inciting violence and the way that people talk on the platforms. Are they addressing any of these issues?
Yes, I'd say that's the second other big piece here. Under the department's view, they basically say that Section 230 is so broadly written and has loopholes in it that it's pretty much allowed platforms to sort of take down whatever content they want, whenever they want to, for whatever reason they want to, without any real transparency or consistency or accountability in how they're doing it. And so that is what the department wants to target. I mean, there are a couple of things I would note here that are important. There's a catch-all phrase that's been in the law that, when it's describing immunities that these companies enjoy, allows them to take down content, even if it doesn't fit into one of a specific number of buckets, if it's otherwise objectionable, they can take it down. And so the department would like to get rid of that language because they feel like it's something that the internet firms have been able to use to basically avoid liability for almost everything. There's another concept that was in the 96 law and talks about acting in good faith. And, you know, and so long as a platform was acting in good faith, they were shielded. But the law never defined what good faith actually is. And so the department is taking a crack at that, particularly when it comes to things like content moderation. And for them, a definition of good faith would be having, you know, a reasonable policy for how you're going to treat content and what your terms of service are, that you communicate it and that you follow it like all the time in a consistent way. And that then you explain to people if their content is removed, why you did so. And so if you did not follow all of these sort of steps, or if the government thought you weren't following your own pledges consistently, again, under their view of how things should be, the platforms could face legal liability for taking down content.
As you mentioned at the beginning, the Justice Department is putting these proposals forward, but they don't make laws. Congress writes the laws, right? So how likely is it that these proposals are actually going to get passed by Congress?
So this is all correct. This is what we have separation of powers for. You know, it's hard to say, look, we live in a time when Congress is basically deadlocked on everything. And so there's all sorts of, you know, pressing issues, hot button topics that people would like to see action on and that Congress, for one reason or another, just can't quite get its act together to do. On the other hand, there have been both Republicans and Democrats who are unhappy with the way Section 230 works. And, you know, a lot of people can see that, you know, look, the internet is a far different place now than it was in 96 when these immunities were first granted. And the idea back then was sort of to protect fledgling companies and to protect the internet from being crippled by legal liability. And you know, the landscape looks a lot different. So I mean, there does seem to be interest on both sides of the aisle in doing something. I mean, I think part of the question will be in the details. And also, you know, we're in a election year and that can also change the calculus. So, I don't know yet what the long-term sort of legislative prospects look like. But, you know, at the very least, this is the government putting down a marker in an explicit way of everything that they think is wrong. And it will surely guide the discussions that happen now on Capitol Hill.
And of course, the big question is, how are the tech companies responding? They're also very different companies than they were in 1996 in terms of the size, the impact, and the sway that they have on this kind of legislation. How are they responding to these proposals?
What we've been basically hearing are the same things that the tech companies have said previously, including when President Trump issued his executive order back in May, that, you know, they view the whole immunity setup as foundational for protecting speech on the internet and for, you know, having them have the ability to run their platforms in a way that is responsible, but that yet doesn't, you know, allow them to face all kinds of distracting and potentially expensive lawsuits. And Facebook says, look, you know, if these kinds of rules apply, you're going to end up with less speech, not more speech, because if we're concerned about legal liability for, you know, all the things that billions of people say on our platform, you know, we're going to have to take a lot more of it down. So we're still waiting to see in more detail what people say specifically with regard to the DOJ proposals. But, I mean, you know, there's a clear split here between what the Trump administration wants and what Silicon Valley wants.
All right. Our reporter, Brent Kendall, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Before we go, one more call out. We know a lot of our listeners work in tech, and as major companies have been announcing sweeping changes in response to the killing of George Floyd, we want to hear how those changes have been impacting you. Call us. Let us know. Has your company addressed protests? Have they implemented new diversity and inclusion policies? What changes do you still want to see? You can call the number in our description and tell us your stories, and we may include them on the show. That was your Tech News Briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.